Welcome to the journal.ie's The Explainer, where every week we take a deep dive into a different news story. I'm Laura Byrne, and this week, what challenges are Irish troops facing in an unstable Middle East? Well, recently, the Journal's Niall O'Connor travelled to the Middle East to report on the work of Irish troops stationed in the Golan Heights before they leave there in April. Around 133 Irish personnel are on peacekeeping duty in the area, a place that has seen a major increase in violence since the beginning of the Hamas and Israeli conflict last October. It's part of a long-standing tradition of Irish peacekeeping in the region, but last year the government informed the United Nations that it was withdrawing its troops from Syria in order to focus on smaller, more impactful missions. Now, the troops are there with the United Nations Disengagement Observer Force, acting as a quick reaction force, and they're deployed when needed to tackle explosions, firefights, artillery strikes and kidnappings. Tensions are higher in the region now than they have been for years, and the work the soldiers do there is perilous. So today we're going to look at the work Irish troops are doing there, and I'm happy to say that our news correspondent Niall O'Connor has returned in one piece and is going to talk us through some of what he saw there. Niall, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hello, Laura.
So Niall, after reading your articles and watching the videos, it looks like it was an incredibly unique experience, and it is rare, I think, that journalists are there, isn't it?
Absolutely. We were the first Irish journalists, I believe, to go on the Syrian side of the UNDAF mission. But also we were lucky enough to get down into a place called Quintera, which is down on the at the Alpha Charlie Gate, which is on the Israeli-Syrian border. And we were able to visit there. And we were told at that location that we were the first journalists in 20 years to visit that place. So it was quite a historic trip.
Yeah, there's no question that the atmosphere is tense in the region since the Hamas attack on Israeli soil on the 7th of October last. And then, of course, we're seeing the horrors in Gaza since Israel's retaliation began. Now, you witnessed some of the chaos that has spilled over into the area that you were in, Niall.
It is very tense there, and very obviously tense as you travel around what the Irish Army called the area of operations. But, you know, when we were there, I certainly heard artillery. I heard what I believe to be Syrian anti-air defences activating. And there was a number of incidents while we were there in that kind of general 75-kilometre area around where the Irish are based, including, you know, shelling and responses to Hezbollah activity just very close by inside the Lebanese border, which is extremely close to where we were after Hezbollah had shot down an Israeli drone. In the area known as the Bekaa Valley. People would know that, I'm sure, from just kind of northeast Lebanon.
And Niall, what's the atmosphere like then on the ground day to day?
The atmosphere is one of kind of calm acceptance, I think, that they're in a war zone. I think ultimately, you know, when we were on patrol, we passed very close to a particular town that's divided by the line of separation. And later that evening, they had suffered some shelling. I understand it was from Israel had shelled this area. There's a lot of activity in the area, obviously, with fighters moving around there, apparently trying to distract Israel from their activities in Gaza. But there is also then in the camp, you know, at one point I remember I was queuing for food at the cookhouse, and there was this repeated kind of ordnance booms in the distance, and that was an attack close by, and the soldiers very calmly continued to queue and just kind of said, yeah, just all they said to each other was, you know, that's ordnance going off. So it's a very regular occurrence. We'll say that, you know, the hearing of ordnance, the hearing of fighting going on. Also overhead, the only jets you hear are Israeli fighters. And every time you hear a jet, that's an Israeli fighter. And when you look up, they're so high in the air, you can't see them, but you can hear them. But for the soldiers, it's very normal. It's their day to day. They're very used to it. And clearly with the QRF in that camp, they're going out and they're actually seeing the results of that ordnance and what that's doing to not just property, but also people.
You mentioned Syria, you mentioned Lebanon, Hezbollah. There's a lot of actors in this area. And as we say, it's pretty dangerous there at the moment. So could you give us the basics then, maybe a potted history of what's going on in the Golan, or what some would know as the Golan Heights? Where is it?
Well, it's located right on the eastern reach of the Mediterranean. where the Irish troops are, I think that's probably best to describe it from that perspective. Where the Irish troops are is an area along the, we'll say, the Israeli, Lebanese and Jordan border with Syria. And that location has been fought over for millennia. But in more recent history, dating back to, we'll say, the 1960s and the 1970s, there has been there have been a number of conflicts in that area and wars between various different state entities and non-state actors, including Lebanon, including Israel, and including Syria. And a number of wars have happened there, Yom Kippur War, for instance, and some of the, we'll say, the more current and more recent incidents in the Syrian civil war, and also a lot of the activity around ISIS.
And maybe we won't get into the weeds too much on it, but the situation right now in wider Syria, what is it like? We saw the horrors of the war there over the last few years. What's the atmosphere like now?
If you, depending on who you speak to, they'll tell you that it's over, but it's not. And it's way up in the north of the country, but it does feed in down into this area. But the Syrian civil war is obviously various disparate groups who are opposed to the regime of Bashar al-Assad. And that's one particular aspect of Syrian life. And you can see the amount of security deployed by the Syrian government in the area would suggest that there are a lot of fears of imminent risk of violence. But it is quite obvious that Syria itself is not in a comfortable place. The regime don't control the whole of the country. And I think you can see from the way those Syrian military forces are deployed that they're deployed in a manner which is to react instantly to all manner of things. It's not just the civil war, it's not just unrest within the country, but it's also clearly the activities of Israel. And I think it's safe to say some of the more militant groups, Islamic groups in the area also.
So how did the UN get involved then?
Well, clearly there was a war between, we'll say, Israel and various countries in the late 1960s. And then in 1974, around about in May 1974, the United Nations had adopted a Security Council resolution to try and bring a bit of peace to the region. And that was called the United Nations Disengagement Observer Force, otherwise known as UNDOF. And they deployed observers to the area to try and bring peace and to try and bring, to get a handle, we'll say, from an observer perspective, so that the international community knows what is going on in that particular area. The Irish joined that mission. They started deploying troops en masse in 2013, and they've been there ever since. And just to understand, I suppose, the area, people need to realise that there are parts of this area, the Golan, that is occupied by Israel, and there are parts of the Golan that are part of Syria. And essentially, there's a geopolitical battle going on there between Israel and Syria for control of the Golan. And the Irish operate in an area called the Bravo area, which is Syria. And the Israelis rest inside in the Alpha area. And the Irish troops patrol that area then. And there's a 75 kilometers long ribbon of land very high up in a mountainous region. And that's the Golan. And that runs from Mount Hermon in the north, which is a very famous mountain. People may have heard biblical stories about, and down to the Jordanian border in the south of that area of operations. And that's an extremely contested area. And, you know, the only people that can do this peacekeeping job are armed soldiers, and 133 army soldiers from Ireland are deployed there to keep the peace.
So you were on patrol with them, and what is it like day to day? What are their lives like out there?
It's fascinating insight, really, and a huge opportunity. And I think the troops were hugely welcoming of us. Basically, what their job in the area is to be the emergency response team to crises. They're called the Quick Reaction Force. They're the force reserve company is the technicalities of it. But ultimately what they are is they're the people that come out to help people who are in difficulty and under fire, or if there's a bombing, or for instance, if there has been a drone attack by Israel, they'll go out and they'll set up a security cordon so that can be investigated. Ultimately, their job is very impactful. It looks an awful lot like a military version of the fire brigade or policing, but they're very heavily armed. They move around in MOAG armored personnel carriers, and they're quite young, an awful lot of the soldiers, but hugely professional, and that's very obvious. And what I did also notice is that a great majority of the Syrian population are very welcoming of the troops and wave at the passing Irish troops. There are tensions there. You can see the tensions, but the vast majority of the population there are very welcoming of the Irish.
And Irish troops, peacekeeping troops, have always had a great reputation, and it's not necessarily because they're heavily armed. It is something to do with the personality and the approach and the training of Irish troops, isn't it? How do these soft skills and the Irish culture maybe contribute to the effectiveness of their peacekeeping?
We hear a lot about this, and I've been to UNIFIL as well, which is in South Lebanon. I've been down there reporting down there twice, and the same skills are used down there. Essentially what it is that it may be an aspect of Irish culture, and some of the military people will tell you that it is an aspect of Irish culture, but it's also about how they're trained, and it's all about using those friendly skills that we all possess as Irish people, that kind of innate soundness, for want of a better phrase, whereby we can use that friendliness to de-escalate really huge tensions. You know, the soldiers operate very quietly, very easily. There's no excitement. There's no dramatic shouts of go, go, go. They are very calm in how they operate. And when they arrive at a situation, and I was certainly with them as they arrived at various locations, and it was very calm, very easygoing, waving and smiling at the population to put people at ease. And but the Irish, when there's a problem, the Irish step up. And that has happened repeatedly. And there are all sorts of reports from UNDOF about the Irish stepping up when it needs to be a robust response. But the vast majority of the time, they are de-escalating, calming the situation. And in doing that, they get a lot of respect.
I think the public would be more familiar maybe with Ireland's much longer mission in the Lebanon. Is the job of the troops that you were with any different to those peacekeepers?
It is. The soldiers will tell you that they prefer UNDOF. Now, the reason why they prefer UNDOF is there's a bit more freedom of movement, we'll say, for the troops, and they can, you know, there's a bit more soldiering done in UNDOF, inside in Syria, that is, compared to UNIFIL. The UNIFIL mission is obviously slightly different in the fact that the way it's conducted depends on the situation on the ground there. But there is a difference, I suppose, and at the moment, UNIFIL, the danger has flicked, because ultimately now UNIFIL, the South Lebanon side of the Irish operation in this region, is very, very dangerous. I have seen charts of some of the activity from Israel and Hezbollah and what they're trading blows. And the Irish are caught right in the middle of that, and it is quite dangerous. UNDOF, on the other hand, has a constant problem of what the military people call kinetic activity. Kinetic activity basically means the use of live fire. And that certainly is going on in that area. And that tension comes with it. You know, we went on patrol wearing body armor and Kevlar helmets. And the reason for that is because the risk is substantial. And they travel around in armored cars. This isn't soft skin cars. This is very dangerous. So there are subtle differences, but ultimately the same skills are implied. And that ultimately the big skill is soldiering, but also that soft power skill of de-escalation. And that's what the troops are doing there.
And then why are Irish troops withdrawing from the Golan Isle?
In short, the Irish Defence Forces have suffered a retention and recruitment crisis over the recent years. There are a variety of reasons for that, which we've covered extensively in the journal. But ultimately, recruitment campaigns haven't been as strong as they should be, for whatever reason. And also, retention is a massive issue, retention of staff in the military. And that has caused, and I spoke to Major General Adrian Omuraku in Syria, and we interviewed him, and he told us simply that it was a rationalisation measure to permit the Irish to come back and be able then to, we'll say, staff the EU battle group, which the Irish are about to start in 2025. Deploying in 2025. So ultimately what needs to happen is that those troops need to come home to fill the gap that's left by the lack of troops in Ireland.
So this wasn't anything to do with the latest round of violence between Israel and what's happening near the Lebanon border. This is separate.
Nothing at all. And I might add also, you know, the soldiers I met, there's no fear factor for them. They're professional soldiers. The impression I get is that they actually want to be in the difficult place and they'd prefer to go back to Undaff. But look, they're soldiers. When they're ordered to do something, they do it. And they're coming home to fill this gap that's here at the moment and to then deploy to the EU battle group.
And did you see the impact on the ground of the staffing and funding issues in the Defence Forces while you were there?
Well, there was a full complement there. But I mean, I've reported extensively on this in the past, you know, in chats with soldiers offside, you do get, you know, you hear their complaints about what might be going on in the DF at the moment, about how things are difficult for them, because particularly in certain jobs, there are soldiers who are double and triple jobbing. They're doing three people's jobs when, you know, before they would have just had their own 5-foot world to be occupied with. But now it's much more broader and they're having to do multiple roles at once. That's clear. But what I saw out there, I mean, I think when they're deployed in a foreign theatre of operations, the complications of home aren't there. And I think they're able to do their job. And I think that's certainly what I saw in Undaff. They were very focused, mission focused. But clearly when they come home, you know, there'll be double jobs and triple jobs for them to do when they're in Ireland to cover for the gaps in the Irish Defence Forces.
And Niall, they're out facing dangers every day. You were out there with them. As you say, a lot going on. They have to come back to base. Is there any class of downtime for the Irish troops at all?
They start very early in the morning and they go to bed early. But there is downtime for them, obviously, so that they can recharge their brains and get ready for the day ahead and what they might have to face. There is a crew, or there are a crew of soldiers who are permanently on 24-hour notice to go in the QRF, and that's kind of done on a shift rate. So you'll see those lads moving around the camp with radios on their hips, and the call goes up for them then to deploy to an emergency, and they can do that within 15 minutes. Now, they've reduced that time, right? 15 minutes is what they have to do, but they've reduced that to 6 minutes. It's quite impressive to see them. We got to see one of them being done, but ultimately what they do is, yeah, there's a lot of crack in that camp. The place where they hang out is called the GPO. And this, they can go in there, they're playing cards, they're playing chess. They played bingo when I was there. But it's, you know, what I must say is that morale was very high in this camp. And there was a lot of crack going on and a lot of fun and a lot of laughing and joking. And you could really see that they were a very close and committed group of people to each other. And it's that kind of classic story of, you know, soldiers looking after each other when they're on a foreign deployment.
You mentioned sitting down with Major General Éadan Ó'Murach, Niall. What other insights did he give you about the future of Irish peacekeeping?
Yeah, I focused on what does this mean for peacekeeping? So what he says is that obviously with the rationalisation situation that they're doing at the moment, they're bringing these troops home. But what he believes is that there is going to be a bit of a change in how peacekeeping is done. The older model, we'll say, from the 50s and 60s and 70s of mass deployments of battalions may not actually be the way it's going to happen in the future. You'd get the impression that there might be a bit of a review going on in the UN about what might be the best way to deal with these things. And one of those ways is to kind of deploy smaller, what he calls smaller but more impactful operations. You know, you look at Mali, you look at the mission there where the Army Ranger Wing were embedded with German troops, that kind of thing. Or maybe, for instance, the training of people. But also then, you know, there are other deployments where smaller groups of Irish soldiers are more specialist, and we'll say using the specialist skills that Irish soldiers have. EOD, for instance, EOD stands for Explosive Ordnance Disposal, the bomb disposal people, that kind of activity, maybe medical. But it's definitely changing. I think it doesn't mean the end of battalion strength deployments, but I think it does certainly mean that there will be a greater focus to smaller operations. I asked him about, we'll say, rumours that I heard that maybe Africa will be getting looked at, and he said, you know, he admitted that the UN certainly is looking at Africa as particularly the Sahel region as a major concern, but wouldn't be drawn on whether Irish peacekeepers will end up down there or not.
And of course, this is it. We're at the mercy of the UN's decision making in terms of our peacekeeping abilities or where to go next. But is there anything in the short term that we're due to rotate into? I know it's hard to predict future conflicts, but there are plenty of them.
Yeah, I think the focus at the moment now in the Irish Defence Forces is certainly this EU battle group. And what the EU battle group is essentially is this kind of emergency response military element of the European Union. And they don't just respond to wars, but they also respond to humanitarian crises. So if there is a natural disaster, you know, the Irish could find themselves from January 2025 on responding to those sort of incidents as well as other issues. I do sense, and I think right across the military, and I speak also to a lot of people, we'll say internationally, and I do sense that Africa is starting really to get looked at, certainly around, we'll say, the Sahel region and the Horn of Africa. Now, the Sahel has been suffering in recent times a lot with, we'll say, a jihadist insurgency, but also with a lot of instability in countries like Mali and Burkina Faso, say, for instance, but also laterally in Niger. And what's going on there is that there has been a number of military coups that have deposed democratically elected governments, but also then there is also an insurgency, a jihadist insurgency in parts of those countries. And I do get a sense that there are discussions going on at a very high level in the UN and also in other organizations like the African Union and the EU about doing something to get that under check, we'll say. And there's benefits to that geopolitically. If you get a handle on the Sahel, and you get a handle on the Horn of Africa, perhaps you get a handle on what's coming across in boats at the Mediterranean. And there are knock-on effects to getting control over that. So I think I do get a sense that Africa is certainly starting to be looked at.
Well, clearly the tensions in the region not easing at all and many challenges still remaining. And Niall, look, we're glad you made it home safely. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks again to Niall O'Connor for joining us today. You've been listening to the Explainer podcast by thejournal.ie. This episode was brought to you by senior producer Nikki Ryan and executive producer Sinead O'Carroll. If you'd like to support all the work we do here, head to thejournal.ie/contribute to make a one-off donation or become a monthly subscriber. And of course, you can always leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.